Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
And even stranger when it's held at the California Museum of Science and Industry. The woodpecker in question is Woody Woodpecker. And today he's 30 years old. That's an old bird. To commemorate the blustering bird's third decade, the museum is exhibiting his animated origin, drawings from his birth in 1941 to the present. Also on hand today was Woody's creator, cartoonist Walter Lantz. He showed the audience how to create their own woodpeckers and later turned the stage over to his wife, Gracie, who's the voice of Woody Woodpecker.
See, Woody's 30 years old, and there were three voice artists who did Woody for the first 8 years. And then Mr. Lantz wanted a new voice for Woody, modulated, and he wanted somebody with theater experience, wanted to understand everything the character said on the screen. So he was auditioning five of the top voice artists, we call them, in Hollywood. And I had wanted to do Woody, but I didn't dare bring up the subject at home. So I had a little thing going with the director, and I said, how about I make a tape, too, and put it in with all the other tapes? So when they showed it, Walter didn't want to watch the artist's work. He just wanted to get a certain sound. So we played the tapes in the studio in our little theater, and the directors and Walter were selecting a voice, and I was number seven, and for some reason or other, they all picked number seven, and I was the only female, by the way, and they said, well, Walter, you know, number seven is Gracie, and you're too young. I can't tell you what he said. I just can't tell you what he said. But I've been doing Woody now and all the female voices in our cartoons now for 20 years and loving every minute of it.
One of the casters for Los Angeles, KTLA, Channel 5. From the news center of the West, this is the Channel 5 Action News, the day's most complete and comprehensive report of world, national, and local news, with California's leading news team of Kevin Sanders, Jerry Coleman, and Larry McCormick, plus exclusive coverage from the world's only telecopter, the Telemobile, and the worldwide facilities of Action News.
Lenny's cartoon character.
Day's Ease is the new...
At the Los Angeles Sheriff's deputies say that two prisoners have escaped from a downtown.
There is a much celebrated 4-year-old
redhead living here in Hollywood. There are many of them, in fact, but this one is one which delights, oddly enough, both men and women, aging in range, ranging in age from 6 to 60. Newsman Bonnie Morris reports.
There was a birthday party today at the Museum of Science and Industry for Melanerpus erythrocephalus. Now, that's a very scientific way of saying that Woody Woodpecker is 30 years old. Woody's creator, Walter Lantz, and Walter's wife, Gracie, who happens to be Woody's voice, helped entertain several hundred children with cartoons and some birthday cake. I later asked Walter and Gracie how Woody was born.
Well, when Gracie and I were first married, we were on our honeymoon, and we had a cottage up at Lake Sherwood, and these pesky little woodpeckers were pecking on the roof all the time. And I'll let Gracie take it from there. She loves to tell the story so well.
No, he really was a character. I'd knock on the wall and he'd knock back. But Walter got the idea. He said, you know, I think that would make a very cute character.
Remember when I said to you, let's shoot that woodpecker?
Yes, oh yes. He said, I think we should shoot him. He's bothering me. And I said, well, it's against the law in California. But he'd make a good character. We talked about it quite a lot. And as a matter of fact, Walter drew the first Woody Woodpecker on our way back from Lake Sherwood.
Did he look anything like the one that I'm looking at today?
No, he didn't. And we usually don't star a new character in the first picture. So Andy Pan was quite famous then. And I gave him a second lead in Andy Panda picture. And we previewed the cartoon. And it was a story about pecking holes in Andy Panda's roof. He went over so big the first night at this preview that I thought, well, I better star this character. We got something here. It's an accident. So we starred him in the second picture, and he's been a star ever since for 30 years today.
He was born that night.
You interested in having the book made into a film? Is that a possibility? I don't think so. I just voted for a sort of historical love affair I've had with films all my life. Maybe that's all I voted for.
There was so much in this introduction that I had to leave out because of the time. Your life was so varied and so remarkable. I'd like to ask you about some of those legendary characters, though, with whom you worked in the really golden days of Hollywood, as they call it. Who would you single out as the greatest actor or the greatest actress that you worked with?
That's pretty difficult to do because, you see, they're all different in a way. And I suppose the most versatile actor, the one that could take more different kinds of roles and make you believe them, was Spencer Tracy. One of the greatest actors, could play himself beautifully, Jimmy Stewart. Another, I suppose, the most believable actor that could play himself and always make you believe it, even though he was in a bad story, he'd never look bad, is Gary Cooper.
How about actresses?
Well, actresses, of course. I think Katharine Hepburn tops the list of my role. Yet my favorite actress is Jean Arthur. She was the warmest kind of an actress. That I loved her voice that broke into a thousand tinkling bells once in a while, and I loved her comedy and her ability to drop scenes. That's wonderful. I thought the girl was.
Did you find, as we've so often heard, those of us who are just laymen and fans of movies, that superstars often had super egos, or almost always, the larger the star, the larger the ego, the more difficult to work with?
Well, I don't think I'd go along with that. I think the superstar of our age is Frank Sinatra, in any way you want to, by any measure that you want to measure him by. And sure, he has an ego, he has a great ego, but he's also one of the humblest kind of a guy in his own way. I don't think so. I think the bigger the star, the easier they are to get along with. That has been my...
You had a very close personal experience, of course, with one of the most terrible-tempered producers of all time, I guess, Harry Cohn. Was there any streak of charity or humility in that man's body? We've all heard such awful tales about him, yet in your book he comes off kind of as an anti-hero. Was there any streak at all of humbleness about Harry Cohn?
I can say he loved one thing, films. Loved films passionately. He loved his work. He loved his company. He loved the fact that he brought his company up from Poverty Row up to one of the major companies, right, just grabbing it and just by hook and by crook and by stealing and badgering and everything else. This he loved very much. He loved his success. He loved his own success. He loved the success of his company. He loved his company and he loved films. In all these attitudes, he was a hero. Well, now...
Personally,
he was every kind of an anti-hero you can think of. But I'll tell you what, he ran his studio on a crude parameter. Did you have guts? If you could stand up to him. An artist with guts, fine. Because you figured that if you had metal enough to stand up, that made you some kind of a better artist. The sensitive, the fragile, the reserved artist, not for him, out of the studio quickly. If he could bully you, you were out. Well, I found that out, and I became his cockiest employee, and therefore I was his longest, one of his employees that lasted the longest with him.
One of the lessons of your book, it seems to me, is that the genius of Hollywood that we've so often heard about was not always just genius. Very often you were plain lucky. There's that great story about how you saved the film Lost Horizons. Can you briefly recap that for us?
I'll try. We thought we had the most wonderful film in the world when we viewed it in the projection room in about 3.5 hours. But we, at our first preview in Santa Barbara, we were very cocky. We really thought we had something. What happened was that they started to laugh after the picture was about 5 minutes in, and they began to laugh and remained laughing, and I ran out of the place, and I just went to and we had an unreleasable picture, and when the picture was over and it was raining, I saw and heard those people come out of there saying, what a terrible thing, what a thing, all these statements that fell on my coffin like clods, you know. And when I went off to air, I had to think about this thing. We had a bad, unreleasable picture. So I got an idea. put the beginning, put the opening title and the beginning of the third reel. That's all. We previewed it again. It was a totally different picture. Totally different picture.
So the picture that everyone knows is Lost Horizon begins two reels in.
Begins two reels in.
That's not very delicate editing.
That's not very delicate editing, but it was very successful editing.
In your book, you're critical of many of the contemporary films, saying that the themes of sex and violence and lewdness are not representative of life in this country. But how representative really were some of your films of life in that time? It Happened One Night, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, the kind of fantasy that was played out on the screen.
Well, they were representative in the fact that they were the protest films of their times, really, especially films like John Doe, and the Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. They were the first among the first protest films of our contemporary times. Now, contemporary times, remember, these are the times of the Depression, when things were truly difficult, when people were truly hungry, and there was no welfare they could go to for assistance. There's no place where they could go to get something to eat. Times were bad. So I made these pictures, and I made them on with an idea that I could bring hope to these change despair into hope. We're going to be all right. And that was the theme of my pictures. That's why they were the audience liked them perhaps more than the critics did.
If you like some recent films, though, you're pretty critical of many of them.
Well, I'm pretty critical of those that are using the sex and the violence for just plain, shoddy, quick buck pictures, I call them. But they need not be, because this permissiveness of today gives us a third dimension that we can make beautiful. I'll give you an example of two fine pictures that I think were made in the last year or two. And one was The Graduate, and the other is Midnight Cowboy. Now, they dealt with pretty permissive stuff, but yet they had wonderful story. They had a wonderful story to tell. They were love stories in a sense, and so we can use this new permissiveness to make great pictures. There's no use of, we can just do away with the pornographic stuff and tell tales, better tales than we ever told before, and I think the great pictures are yet to come.
Mr. Capra, thank you very much. I know that we could go on and on, but as you know, our time in television news especially is limited. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
And we have Walter and Grace Lance. And I know you know about them. If you like cartoons, you know who these people are. And they're all waiting in the wings. So we'll be right back. Thanks, Bob. This. The voice of the most famous woodpecker in the world, Woody Woodpecker. Now let's meet the couple responsible for Woody. He's the creator and she's the voice. Greet Grace and Walter Lance.
This would never happen to me.
I didn't ever expect that voice would come out of someone like yourself.
Oh, you're used to my pear-shaped tones, aren't you?
How did that whole thing happen? How did, because you...
Breathing.
But you get the voice. The voice is so... You don't have more than one people. Do you have somebody standing by?
No, no.
You're Woody.
Yeah,
how long have you been Woody?
21 years. I'm an old woodpecker.
Yeah, wonderful. Do you get residuals?
She sure does.
Hot dog.
Very hot bird.
Are people surprised when they find out you're the voice?
Usually the audience says, oh, no.
They're not disillusioned.
I'm so elegant, you know. Mike, may I tell you one quick thing about Philadelphia?
Yes.
I'm so happy to be in Philadelphia.
We're happy you're here.
I came here 46 years ago and played my first dramatic role in the theater, tried out at the Walnut Street Theater in The Shame Woman, and with Florence Rittenhouse. That's a pretty famous name in Philadelphia,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
And we went to Broadway from here, and here I am 46 years later.
As a woodpecker.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
How did you two meet? You didn't meet in Philadelphia.
No, we met in Hollywood.
Gracie was playing in the Abbey's Irish Rose, which, you know, is...
That name.
Years old. And she came to Hollywood, and Henry Duffy was at that time doing the Duffy Players, and Gracie played leads with the Duffys for 8 or 9 years. You remember the Duffy Players, Bob?
Yes, you bet I do.
You know, I'm older than you are, Bob.
You couldn't be.
Now,
older than
me.
Don't fight.
No, I want to be the daddy of it all today.
Oh.
I had my 68th birthday Sunday.
Oh, aren't you wonderful?
Oh, yeah.
And tomorrow I start on the vitamins.
Oh, you do?
I haven't had them yet. Tomorrow I start.
I think you must have my dentist, too, because you have a gorgeous smile.
Well, that's the woodpecker laugh. Yes. I mean, I guess I exercise them a lot.
Is it true, Walter, that you took a course by mail, cartoon course by mail, as a
Yes,
award?
I took my first correspondence school course when I was 12 years old, and that's why I think that all children, or anyone that wants to be a cartoonist or an artist, they should start very young.
Mm-hmm. You started at Universal at the same time Walt Disney did, didn't you?
Well, no, I made cartoons here in New York for Bray and for Hearst. And then I went to Hollywood, and Disney, who was a very dear friend of mine, was doing a series called Oswald Rabbit for Universal. Well, they decided that they didn't want rabbits anymore. So Disney said, well, I have a mouse. And they said, well, everybody's doing mouse characters. We can't have another mouse, so Walt quit. And then they hired me.
Well, excuse me, was that Mickey he was talking about?
Yeah, and it turned out, you know, So then I took over Oswald Rabbit, changed him from a black rabbit to a white rabbit, and I produced Oswald Rabbits for about 10 years, and then I created Woody Woodpecker. That was the best thing that ever happened to me.
How many Woodies did you draw before you finally decided that this is the one, this is the way he's going to look?
Well, it came about more or less as an accident, you know. We had this home up in Sherwood Lake, and we were just married, and this woodpecker was pecking on the roof. And he ruined the roof many times, so I tried to shoot him and get him off the roof, and Gracie said, look, honey, why shoot him? Why not join him? So that was really Gracie's idea, and I made a few drawings and took to the studio and went over with my staff, and they all liked it, and we didn't want to star him in the first picture. We didn't think he would make it.
He had no charisma.
No.
you mean characters, cartoon characters have to audition too?
Well, they sure do.
What did he play, a heavy in the first picture?
He played more or less a raucous heavy in an Andy Panda cartoon that I was making at the time. And we previewed the first picture, and of course, he stole the picture from me. And then on, we start him in the second picture, and see, the 1st of June, Woody Woodpecker was 30 years old.
My gosh. That's incredible. Yes, now, you play in foreign countries. Do you use the same name in the foreign countries?
Yes. Woody's name? We play in 72 different foreign countries.
72 foreign countries.
Like in Mexico, they call him El Pajaro Loco. That means the crazy bird.
Yeah.
And in Italy, they call him Picchio Pacchio.
A thinking bird.
And it's interesting, Mike, in most of these countries, we used to translate into the language of the country, but now they like to hear the dialogue in English.
That's incredible. Listen, you're going to teach Bob and me how to do a Woody Woodpecker drawing, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Well, would you draw one right now for us and give us
let the audience come and see it happen?
And talent.
We'll have to get this at an angle. I guess, is this all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, first we draw. You better watch, Bob.
I'm watching.
You're going to have to do this. First you draw two eyes. I used to do this in my TV show, you know. Our TV show, the Woody Woodpecker show, is on NBC every Saturday morning, Mike, as you know. Then you draw the body, which is an oval. Then the legs.
Looks so simple, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it looks simple, doesn't it? Oh, you lost me already.
Then the tail. Oh, well, you can do this. It may look like Picasso, but you'll do it.
I can't read. Does he fly at all in the car? I can't read.
Oh, yes, he flies, he walks,
that's
he
when
runs,
he
does
when he flies.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We got the character. Now, do a little voice there.
Right back. The kind of the evolution of Woody, and here this one was made in 1941.
You notice his hair is combed back.
Oh,
his
hair's combed back,
beak,
the long beak.
Yellow legs.
Now we're to 1945, the beak is shortened.
And he's a little fatter, and the hair is straighter.
Those plastic surgeons who went anything for a buck, weren't they?
Then we thought he should be
upturned.
Smaller.
Yeah, and the upturned beak.
See, he's short enough.
See the difference in the beak? Look at here.
Yeah.
It was kind of down, and here it's up. Here he is today.
There he is today.
Well, that's 1960, but he's pretty much the same.
He's never changed. Huh?
Yeah, he gets prettier like grapes.
You're going to explain, and I think this is going to be very fascinating to our audience, how animation works.
Well, you know, we don't write stories in script form. We make drawings. This is a comic strip. We call it a storyboard.
Let me show. Okay.
That's a storyboard. And it requires an artist to make about 250 of these for a complete story.
250 goes on and on, page after page.
He not only has to be a writer, but he has to be an artist.
Now, how many people do you have drawing Woody at the moment? You have to teach each one of them? Individually, how to do it?
Oh, I don't teach them. We have experienced artists. They've all been in the business for 30 or 40 years.
But everybody has a little different flair and a little different style. And
they all draw them the same because they use a model chart. Now, for instance, when we start, the background artist makes a set. This is a tree that Woody is going to play his scene on. Then
a color
drawing is made of the tree. Now, you hold that a moment, Mike, and now here's what we call a cell. I'll show you how these work a little later. See, there's Woody on the tree. Now, there are about 5,000 of these drawings made, and each one has to be photographed one at a time.
You mean there's 5,000 for the entire show?
For 6 minutes.
That's something, isn't it?
Now, must be very expensive, is it, Walter?
It is. A short cost between $45,000 and $50,000 for 6 minutes.
And they run, the average for a short is between 5 and 8 minutes, isn't it?
5 and 6 minutes.
5 and 6?
Mm-hmm. Now, for instance, here's a stack of drawings, Bob. There's 60 of them, see?
Mm-hmm.
And each drawing is a little different. Now, we make, the animator makes the drawings, and then girls put a celluloid like that over the drawing and make it tracing. So when they flip, let's see, where's the camera?
Right here.
Oh. Now watch how Woody moves as I flip these drawings. See him moving? He's trying to sleep, and there's a building being constructed right next to him. There's so much noise that he's shaken off the limb, and he sits up, and he reaches into the tree, takes out two puffs of cotton, and puts them in his ears.
There you go. In the ears.
Is that clear?
Yes.
Isn't that
Now, how much separation is there between each one of those cellophanes or whatever you call it?
Well, I can show you here. Now, there's
just a little tiny move each time, isn't
just
there?
Just see it. If I can just put 30. See? He's moving his hands.
Very little.
So sometimes we space the drawings an eighth of an inch other times an inch. It all depends how fast.
In other words, for an arm to come up like this might take about 10 drawings.
About 10 drawings, right.
Yeah.
Now, Walter has brought a cartoon film of this very story animated. So let's see it. Would you roll it down, please?
Guess who? About that. Hey, Buster, cut out that racket.
Promised to show Bob and myself how to draw Woody, and we have our ears.
You'll be Dolly and you'll be Picasso. Let's see where we go.
Okay.
Now, first, look, Bob. And
yeah.
My first, you draw two ovals like that. Oh, that's fine. Good. Now we'll put the pupils in. You got that?
No.
Now we'll put the eyebrows right over the eyes. Now, this part seems difficult, but now we have two lines for the bill. One that way, and one that way. Well, that's fine. Now, put this line here. That makes them smile. Good. Now, Mike, here's the cheek, see? Hey, I'm going to hire you. This is good. Now we finish. Now we finish the head. We not finish it.
We finish the head.
This is this. That's the top knot. Come on, Dolly, you're doing fine. Mike, you're very good. Okay. Now
you move more hair.
A short neck with a little ruffle under it. That's fine. Now the body, it just, we make a little sausage thing like that, see? Start here. That's right, good. Oh, now we put the legs in. Michael, now we'll put the leg down.
Gotcha.
See? That's one leg.
Sorry about that, Woody.
And then here's the other, see?
If I could walk that way, I wouldn't need to talk about it.
Hey, we could sell these at the Museum of Modern Art, I think. A little cold-legged, but that's because we're so many Westerns. You're doing fine, Mark. One more foot. That's good. Now we'll finish with two lines for this arm. His hand. That's good. Fine, you need a line? Then you guys are all right. Now to make it easy, and we'll put the other hand on this hip. Now you all sign it so that maybe we can auction these off and Children's Hospital in Philadelphia.
Right here in Philadelphia, yes.
There we are. Sign your old name, sir.
Uncle Bob, now we have. I put Merv Griffin on there. Let him take the rap. I don't mind. Would you teach us how to do Woody's voice now?
Oh, that's so simple. You have to get a sound like that.
Bob,
yeah. That's Bob.
And when I'm sad.
And when I'm sad, it's.
I'm worried. I'm worried.
And when I'm sad.
Walter and Grace Lance. Thank you, Walter.
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.